Well, hello, this is Bob Sutherland from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from a number of business sources. Today we'll be reading from, again, the very small section of the Raleigh News and Observer's business section. We'll read some from the Wall Street Journal, from the Triangle Business Journal, and from Reuters and Bloomberg. Well, election signals gridlock, and the markets don't even mind. Major U.S. stock indices soared Wednesday, with the Dow Jones Industrial Average gaining nearly 550 points after the uncertainty of contentious midterm elections ended with the most widely expected result, a Democratic takeover of the House and Republicans retaining the Senate majority. The Dow's gain of 549 points, or 2.1%, to jump to 26,180 was broadly based, with healthcare stocks performing especially well as the threat of an Obamacare repeal became less likely. The S&P 500 index had a similar percentage jump, while the technology-heavy NASDAQ composite was up 2.6%. A divided Congress likely means gridlock in Washington for the next 2 years on major policy matters. That would be just fine with businesses, which already have locked in a large corporate tax cut and sweeping relaxation of regulations. That agenda has temporarily boosted the U.S. economy, and the election results are unlikely to change its trajectory. Although growth is projected to slow in the next 2 years as the fiscal stimulus fades, that's an outcome that had been expected even if the GOP maintained control of the House. The business community couldn't have imagined in its wildest dreams having a president as sympathetic to their cause, General, as President Donald Trump, said Mark Hamrick, senior economic analyst at financial brokerage website Bankrate.com. He goes on to say you would require both houses of Congress to go Democratic to essentially override all of that legislatively, and you don't have that. Even though Democrats opposed the tax cut legislation because much of it was focused on corporations and the wealthy, the party won't be able to do a large-scale rollback of the cuts, given that the Republicans retain control of the Senate and Trump would veto such a bill anyway. Well, back here in Raleigh, one of Triangle's largest employers plans a layoff across the company. Technology company Cisco Systems, one of the RTPs, or Research Triangle Park's largest employer, is planning layoffs. In its most recent quarterly report, Cisco, which has around 5,000 employees in the RTP, said it has implemented a multiple structuring plan to reduce its cost structure. This has resulted in workforce reductions and the consolidation of certain leased facilities. The impact of the layoffs in North Carolina was not immediately known, as details of the layoffs in terms of numbers and location were not revealed. The San Jose, California-based company has had several rounds of layoffs in recent years, the News and Observer reported. Over the last several years, we have been transforming Cisco to deliver even greater value to our customers, so said Robin Bloom, a spokeswoman for Cisco. She goes on to say, we continue to make decisions to ensure that our investments and resources are aligned with strategic growth areas of the business. Cisco also reiterated that despite the layoffs, it continues to hire and has more than 3,800 open positions it is trying to fill. The company has not filed a workforce adjustment and retraining notification with the state, which would be required if the layoffs affected more than 500 employees in North Carolina. Well, the White House, the top economic advisor, Mr. Larry Kudlow, said Thursday he opposes the federal minimum wage arguing that the decades-old law is a terrible idea that drives up costs for small businesses across the country. He said that he would oppose any attempt to work with Democrats in Congress to lift the federal minimum wage should the party take back the House or the Senate in 18 midterm elections. My view, he says, is a federal minimum wage is a terrible idea. Kudlow said at a Washington Post live event, adding that raising it would damage small business by forcing them to face higher payroll costs. Kudlow later called the idea of hiking the federal minimum wage silly. The federal minimum wage was enacted in 1938. Democratic candidates have pushed for raising the minimum wage, which is currently at $7.25 an hour, to as high as $12 or $15 an hour. Conservative economists have argued it does not make sense to have the same wage floor in different states where costs can vary dramatically. For example, Idaho is different from New York, Alabama is different from Nebraska. That's why the federal minimum wage doesn't work for me, Kudlow said. He goes on to say he appeared to also oppose minimum wages at the state and local levels, citing conservative arguments that it constrains business growth by adding to that cost. But he said the federal government should not interfere. Well, locally, again, one thing, sure thing, is the HQ2 Quest. Amazon will be everywhere. From San Francisco, this is from the New York Times. What a farce. That was one of the immediate reactions when word leaked out on Monday that Amazon's much ballyhooed search for a second headquarters outside of Seattle would result in not one, but two new locations. Amazon's critics were apoplectic at what they called bait and switch. Mr. Robert B. Engel of the Free and Fair Markets Initiative, that's a nonprofit that is a determined foe of the retail of all fronts, he said, I was a bit shocked. They've duped more than the bidders. They've duped all of us. They can't even live up to a promise that wasn't fair to anyone but Amazon. From the company's point of view, however, things seem to be working out rather nicely. The Quest kept a persistent spotlight on Amazon as a suitor everyone sought, even as the company apparently decided and said to set up smaller operations in the Washington, D.C. metro area and in New York City. They're the two most obvious places all along, and Amazon declined to comment. But amid the guessing game, the company got information from dozens of cities about how much they would pay for a strong Amazon presence and valuable data that will be no doubt used to expand. Now, what we see is Amazon evolving into a corporation whose headquarters is virtual and whose physical presence will span the globe, so said Charles R.T. O'Kelly. He's director of the Burrell Center on Corporations, Law, and Society at Seattle University. He goes on to say instead of being a headquartered in one place and moving to a second headquarters, Amazon is going to be and be thought of as everywhere. This, after all, is how Amazon sees its destiny, that is, to become not just the everything store, as it was branded a mere 5 years ago, but the everything company. People will buy groceries from Amazon. They'll be entertained by Amazon. They'll pick up snacks at Amazon Go stores. And they'll see all the ads they need on Amazon and find a plumber through Amazon, communicate through Amazon's Alexa, and that is just the beginning. Now, set against such ambitions, the word second headquarters, or in Amazon parlance, HQ2, which proves so beguiling to the media, politicians and local governments ultimately mean little. The word headquarters is a non-technical, non-legal term, but it plays well in the press to talk like this, said O'Kelly. King Hai Wang, a finance professor at the University of Central Florida, joined in the conversation. Well, job openings dip, but they still exceed job seekers. The number of jobs posted by U.S. employers declined slightly in September, but still exceeded the number of unemployed Americans and remained near a two-decade high. The report Tuesday from the Labor Department suggested that many companies are straining to fill jobs in the face of a robust job market. The department said job openings declined 4% to roughly 7 million and still close to the highest levels on records dating to December of 2000. The number of openings far exceeded the roughly 6 million people who were unemployed in September. Well, from our election, incomplete returns approve of more money for parks and schools. Early election results Tuesday indicate that Wake County voters are willing to let leaders borrow more than $1 billion in bonds to pay for school construction projects and parks. Around 67% of voters in early returns backed a referendum to borrow $548 million for Wake County school system construction projects based on early voting returns. Those initial returns also showed 66% backing borrowing $349 million for the Wake Community College. Now, that particular article was in the paper the day of the election, so you can tell from the verbiage that it was prelim. Aldi adds home delivery in Raleigh-Durham areas. The Aldi grocery store chain is the latest to offer home delivery to shoppers in the Raleigh-Durham area. The service will use Instacart to facilitate the online shopping and delivery. That is the same service used by Food Lion, Publix, Costco, and several other national grocery chains. According to a news release from Aldi, groceries can be delivered in as little as an hour. Users will register at the Aldi site and fill their cart online, then select the time frame for their delivery. There is a $10 minimum order required for all deliveries. First-time Instacart shoppers in the area are being offered $10 off their first three Aldi orders of $35 or more with the code Aldi Delivery 446. Now, if you've already used Instacart with Food Lion or Publix, the discount will not work for you. Aldi's delivery charges are determined by a number of factors, such as how quickly you need your order, the total cost of your order, and your location. According to Aldi, orders over $50 with a delivery window of within 1 hour will typically have a fee of $5.99. A time frame of 2 to 5 hours would be about $3.99. Well, getting back to Amazon, the HQ2, our governor, North Carolina Governor Roy Cooper, said state officials have not heard anything from Amazon about the status of the tech giant's second headquarters. News reports in recent days have said that the Seattle company has selected Northern Virginia and New York Borough of Queens to develop dual headquarters facilities that will employ 50,000 people. But Amazon has not made any official announcement and has not provided details to officials in North Carolina. Cooper says, "We're waiting to hear," he told the Council of State meeting. "We have not heard. The Raleigh-Durham area was one of 20 in the country and Canada in the final running to lure the Amazon site, dubbed HQ2. Amazon executives say they would make the announcement this year and invest $5 billion in the mega project, which would be equivalent in scale to its 45,000-employee Seattle site. The influx of tens of thousands of high-paid technology workers would be transformative and disruptive to use the community selected to host the Amazon office complex, stimulating local economies and boosting the local tax base, but also put a strain on local schools, roads, and other public services." Well, Bojangles in the news. This is from the Charlotte Observer, as a matter of fact. A new chapter is about to begin for Bojangles. That's an iconic brand that started in Charlotte in 1977. The chicken and biscuits chain has agreed to be acquired in an all-cash deal by two New York firms. They are Durational Capital Management, LLP, and the Jordan Company, LLP. That's according to a statement on Tuesday. Bojangles shareholders will receive $16.10 a share, which represents a 39% premium to the closing share price of $12 a day before the speculation arose that Bojangles could be selling itself. The deal, which is subject to shareholder approval, is expected to close in the first quarter of fiscal 19. Bojangles said in the statement that when the transaction closes, it will continue to be operated as an independent, privately held company and will remain based in Charlotte. Now, in the years since it went public in 15, Bojangles has been beset with a number of challenges, prompting company leaders to work to improve the chain's financial health and prompting experts to speculate that Bojangles could be a takeover target. Excuse me, please. For instance, Bojangles expanded into new markets outside the Carolinas, but many of those new restaurants haven't fared as well as the ones in the core markets. In its last earnings report, in which the company said that its quarterly profit plummeted over 70%, Bojangles said it closed 10 company-operated stores in Alabama, Kentucky, Tennessee, and Virginia. Also, in its last earnings report, Bojangles said it had removed four very slow-moving menu items, that is the jambalaya bowl, smoked sausage biscuit, barbecue pork sandwich, and a cheddar bow biscuit from its menu. Clifton Rutledge, a former executive at Texas-based Whataburger, who steered Bojangles through its initial public offering, abruptly stepped down in March after about 4 years as Bojangles' CEO. And Randy Kibler, who ran the company from 7 to 11, was named interim CEO. Well, a Texas company has bought a Carrier apartment complex for $74 million. A Texas-based real estate investment company has purchased its second apartment complex in the Triangle in the last 4 months. Landtower Residential bought the Western Corners apartments in Cary from Woodfield Development last month for the $74 million. That's according to a news release. In June, the two companies made another deal worth $76 million when Landtower bought the Bull House apartments near the Durham Bulls Athletic Park. Landtower also owns the Realm at Patterson Place in southwest Durham. Well, a $28 million donation has been made to the resurgent textile industry. North Carolina State University will rename its textile college following a $28 million donation. That's the largest in the program's 119-year history. On Friday, Chancellor Randy Woodson announced that the college now will be called the Wilson College of Textiles in honor of the family of alumnus Frederick Eugene Wilson, a business owner from High Point. The gift from the Wilsons will be invested in an endowment to provide ongoing support for faculty, research, and facilities for the only textile college remaining in the United States. That's according to the university. Now, Fred Wilson is chairman of the board of his family-owned business, which is called Piedmont Chemical Industries, based in High Point. The company historically made textile chemicals that used yarn and fabric. That business was started in 1938 by Wilson's father when the textile business was thriving in North Carolina. Wilson said it is time to invest in textiles, which are emerging again in the United States after a long period of decline, including mill closures and an exodus for cheaper labor in Asian countries. Chapel Hill gives approval for a smaller Wegmans store. Construction of new Wegmans on U.S. 15501 is looming, but the grocery store could be smaller than anticipated. The $30 million project will replace the now vacant 14.7-acre Performance Auto Mall between the highway and Old Durham Road. Demolition is underway and a spring or summer of 2020 opening is anticipated. Although the Chapel Hill Town Council approved a 130,000-square-foot store, the developer recently got town staff approval to build 99,000 square feet instead. The new store is part of an East Coast expansion that could bring five locations to Chapel Hill, Raleigh, Cary, and Wake Forest. Excuse me, please. One of the planned Cary stores also was downsized from 130 to 103,000 square feet, reflecting a new direction for Wegmans that meets changing market demands. "They've done this to all their stores," said Chapel Hill Mayor Pam Heminger. "They found a better way to have less square footage, so less heating and cooling and all of that, and still offer the same amount of inventory." The smaller Chapel Hill store did not need town council approval because the council is only required to vote on projects that exceed their permitted square footage by 5%. Well, the October, again from the New York Times, the October employment numbers feature everything that you might hope for a jobs report. Employers keep creating jobs at a healthy clip, 250,000 of them in October, a boom that was apparent in every major sector, and that continued unabated even as the United States economy inched closer to full employment. The unemployment rate remained at a multi-decade low of 3.7%. More notably, the proportion of the population either working or looking for work rose 0.2%. The number of adults not in the labor market at all fell by 487,000, and employers evidently needed to pay higher wages to coax these workers off the sidelines. Long the soft underbelly of the expansion, and average hourly earnings are now up 3.1% over the last year from 2.8% in the previous reading. Put it together, and this is the best time for the United States labor market in at least 18 years, and maybe closer to 50, though it would be nice to see sustained wage growth substantially higher than inflation, not just in a single month, before making any comparisons to the boom of the 60s. There's a reason people call economics the dismal science, though, so it's worth puzzling through some of the questions that remain unanswered and that, depending on your view, could make a person a little more cautious about the new data. Well, here's another large donation, this time to one of the UNC programs. The Curtis Foundation of Raleigh has given $21.75 million to UNC Chapel Hill, including $10 million to the UNC School of Media and Journalism, its largest gift ever. That's the announcement from the university on Friday. The foundation is headed by broadcast executive and UNC 1963 alumnus Don Curtis of Raleigh. Curtis and his wife Barbara decided to make the donation to the university to support journalism, medical research, and athletics. Of the total, $8 million will go toward the new building, and that will be known as the Curtis Media Center, which will feature new technology and a flexible space for production, team projects, and other uses. An additional $2 million will go to a fund to support career and extracurricular activities for students. Now, Dean Susan King said the facility will be a glass structure so that students passing by can see the working going on inside. "It couldn't be a better time to have such a boost," she said in an interview, referencing a time of duress in the journalism industry. Well, gold paired some gains on Wednesday, but held firm as the dollar slid after the U.S. midterm elections delivered a split Congress and as investors looked ahead to a Federal Reserve meeting for signals on future interest rate hikes. Gold was up 0.2% to $1,229 an ounce, having earlier hit 1235, while U.S. gold futures rose 0.4% to 1230. The split government is unlikely to impact gold much. Gold has been rather inured to geopolitical developments this year. The biggest driver for gold remains the U.S. dollar, and its reaction has been reasonable given the dip in the dollar, said Tai Wong, head of metals trading at BMO. The dollar index fell, making bullion more attractive for holders and other currencies as a split Congress dampened expectations for a major fiscal policy boost to the economy. Gold seems mighty happy in the 1215 to 45 range for now, as we await the next real change in the chessboard, in the trade chessboard, so said Wong. Investors have largely opted for the safety of the greenback rather than gold, a traditional safe haven, this year as U.S.-China trade row continues. Democrats won control of the House, giving them the opportunity to block President Donald Trump's push for a further round of tax cuts and regulation and deregulation, my apologies, as a measure that had boosted the U.S. economy, stock markets, and the dollar and kept the Fed on a policy tightening path. Market participants are now keeping a close eye on the two-day Fed meeting set to begin Wednesday to gauge the outlook for U.S. monetary policy. No change in the Fed rate is expected, but investors and traders will be listening to see if any changes in the 2019 rate hike predictions, so said Walter Peerwit, EVP of Investment Services at Dillon Cage Metals. The Fed raised rates in September and said it planned four more increases by the end of 19 and another in 20, citing steady economic growth and a robust jobs market. With President Donald Trump's Republican Party holding on to its Senate majority, the results from Tuesday's election were in line with expectations, while gridlock in Washington could hamper Trump's political and economic agenda. Few expect a reversal of tax cuts and financial deregulation measures that have already been enacted. The view helped all three Wall Street equity indices open stronger. The Dow Jones fell 213 to 25,845, but that was on during the day on Tuesday. The good news and away from markets is that there was an uncertainty that's now been removed. We know where we stand for the next 2 years, and investors will focus back on the fundamentals, which are earnings growth and the economy, so said Guy Miller, chief market strategist at the Zurich Insurance Group. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Money Matters. I do hope you've enjoyed it, and please be sure to listen next time. I'm Bob Sutherland, reading for the Reading Service, and today's reading of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, which has served our community since 1974. They can be reached by dialing 919-781-1973. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. So long, until next time.